This is Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's your host, Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, it's always a pleasure to welcome back to the program Dr. Gary Morgan, who is the director of the Michigan State University Museum. Gary, good to see you, and I hope your summer's going well.
Well, always a pleasure to be here, Kirk. Summer's going just perfectly so far.
Well, speaking of summer, and this is sort of iconic in the summers around here, but the Great Lakes Folk Festival is coming up in about a week in downtown East Lansing.
It is. Another year's passed, and all of my staff at the museum are feverishly completing the last steps of getting another successful festival up, and we're always excited at this time of year. The adrenaline's pumping.
Well, tell our listeners who may not be familiar with the festival, what are some things? That's August 9 through 11 in East Lansing. What are some of the features?
Well, we always strive for the greatest diversity we can. This year there's going to be a particular focus on artists from the Great Lakes Basin. So there'll be performers from Michigan, Illinois, Ohio, and so forth, but with the same kind of cross-cultural and cross-performance diversity that we try to get in every year. I think one of the things that really distinguishes the Great Lakes Folk Festival is the care that goes into selecting the performers. And not only are they quality artists, they're also performers who've committed themselves to their craft, as it were, to actually maintaining the traditions of the musical art form, to mentoring others in various ways. And I think it's that diversity which people remark upon time and time again. And this year we'll have 15 different groups and artists over those 3 days. So I can certainly say with absolute conviction to any of your listeners, whatever your tastes may be, you will find something over those 3 days that you will love.
Actually, I did a little bit of perusing of your artists as well, and you've got it set up on the webpage so that you can click on a photograph of the artist, and it gives you more information about their background. Very user-friendly, an excellent resource.
Yeah, we try to improve the website every year for exactly the reasons you say, because the 3 days are quite complex. And we have four stages in action over that time, something happening every moment of the festival. We try to make it as easy as possible for people to find where they want to be at any particular time. And if they come back over the course of the Friday, Saturday, Sunday, because the performers are on stage more than once, typically they're performing 2 to 4 times, you can generally, with a little bit of calendaring, get to everyone that you want to see over those days.
Well, speaking of calendaring, on the website, too, there's a very convenient way that you can look and plan your 1, 2, or 3 days at the festival. But do you have to reserve a spot for any of the events that are going on?
No, you don't. Just turn up. It's a very casual and informal event in that way. As I think your listeners know, there's no entry charge. We do certainly encourage people to donate if they can afford to donate. The festival relies very heavily on a whole raft of supporters. And the great friends of the festival and those who attend each year are really the staples to what makes it happen. And in any given year, we expect that we'll be getting somewhere approaching 70,000 visitors, which really...
Oh, that's fantastic.
In the city of East Lansing just comes alive, and the sound of such diversity of performers and the stage, which I always personally love so much, the dance stage.
Yes.
I mean, I must say just how quickly people are up on their feet. It's just such a community engagement, and people who are really very, very good on their toes through to those who are clearly little better than me. But it doesn't matter. It's all about the good time.
Well, one thing you're doing, you're going to be honoring one of my favorite places in Michigan, and that's Carlson's Fisheries up on the Leelanau Peninsula, the lovely little town of Leland. They're getting a Michigan Heritage Award.
Yes, they certainly are. I'm sure many of your listeners have been up to Leland. They know it as a very delightful town with a wonderful history and heritage, particularly associated with fishing. And Fishtown, of course, has become a major draw card for tourism. But what's very interesting with Carlson's, of course, is that they maintain a commercial enterprise. So this is where there's a real intersect between tourism and an industry which draws heavily on its traditions but has managed to remain viable in the modern world. And I think that's a really strong message coming out of Carlson's and their win of the Michigan Heritage Award this year, that the heritage we're recognising is not something just from the past. It's something very viable, very living today, very much a glue that underpins society. And what Carlson's over five generations have shown is that they can maintain so many of these traditions, but in an evolving, adaptable way that can still produce a product for a modern audience and a modern marketplace.
My guest is Dr. Gary Morgan, who's the director of the Michigan State University Museum. You know, speaking of the products that Carlson produces, they're smoked whitefish, as you probably well know. Fabulous.
It's also about quality, of course. Yeah, I mean, people don't want
to... Right out of the boat.
Well, you couldn't get fresher. And that's an important generic point, that it's not just about indulgence here. I mean, you look at an industry like Carlson's fishery. They've had to be able to continue to produce that quality product which meets a marketplace, and yet they've done it by maintaining a number of the traditions. And that kind of generic applies right across what we broadly call folk art, folk traditions, that they're not just things from the past, they're not just nostalgic, they're very much contemporary and alive today. And it's that kind of maintenance of a contemporary relevance, the fact that they are drawing upon traditions, but they're always evolving. And that as each new generation comes on board, they help that evolution by drawing upon what they've learnt from the generations before. And it's that element of contemporary evolution which sometimes I think people don't always pick up on the notion of folk arts and folk traditions.
Yeah, and as a subset to the Carlson story, as you know, Fishtown was in jeopardy of development not too long ago, and the Carlsons and others in the community were instrumental in basically saving Fishtown as a cultural heritage center.
Absolutely right, and I think in hindsight, everybody is so relieved that happened. I mean, it's just all too easy for wonderful examples of heritage to be lost on what is sometimes a short-term gain. And what's happened here, of course, is that Fishtown has maintained that heritage to the advantage not only of that community, but most certainly of Michigan more broadly, and I would suggest of the country at large. And, of course, a lot of that is documented in a wonderful recent publication. On Fishtown by Laurie Summers.
Laurie Summers, who's a local writer, and I've been reading that book actually.
Yeah, look, I'd encourage anybody who can get a copy to do so. It was on this year's Notable Book Awards for Michigan. Laurie is a long-term friend of the museum. She's a research associate at the museum and for many years has been a presenter at the Great Lakes Folk Festival. So we were really delighted when her book was honored in the 2013 Notable Book Awards.
Yeah, so it's a wonderful book, and the Carlsons, of course, are prominently featured.
Oh, of course. And she really immersed herself into the community of Fishtown to document it. And it's not only a great read, and a good work of scholarship, but very accessible. I think anybody could enjoy reading it. But some great photos throughout it, really lovely.
Absolutely.
Black and white images which show the evolution of Fishtown.
Well, for our listeners, what are the hours, Gary, for the Great Lakes Folk Festival, August 9 through 11? Well, I have them here. Let me see if I'm right. 6 to 10:30 on August the 9th?
That's it.
And Saturday, August 10th, noon to 10:30 p.m.?
Got it.
And then Sunday, which is when the Carlsons will be awarded, I think around 3:30 or so.
That's correct.
Noon to 6 p.m.?
Yeah, exactly right. And at those various times, if you're a night owl, then come along in the evenings. we're always got our fingers crossed that the weather will be kind to us. It's a little unpredictable, but the evenings when we have those lovely summer long evenings are just gorgeous.
And if you're a Dancing with Stars wannabe, you're going to have your opportunity to get up on that stage.
Oh, look, the only problem you'll have is finding room.
Well, I've been talking with Dr. Gary Morgan. Always a delight to have you on the show, Gary. Gary's the director of the Michigan State University Museum. And again, the festival, the Great Lakes Folk Festival, coming up August 9 through 11 in East Lansing. Thanks so much, Gary, for being on the program. Good to see you.
Always a pleasure.
That was Greening of the Great Lakes with Dr. Kirk Heinze on MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Find more online at greeningofthegreatlakes.com.
The Michigan State University Department of Radiology is a leader in MRI, imaging research, and patient care. From world-class research to state-of-the-art patient care, we're providing outstanding diagnostic imaging technology. We're also a leader in sports medicine, delivering quality care to athletes and sports participants of all ages. Visit us online at rad.msu.edu and see how we are boldly designing the future.
I'm Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association. Whether you're moving across town or across the country, relocating to a new job or a new city is always a challenge. When you join the MSU Alumni Association family, wherever you go, you'll have an instant circle of friends on hand to help you get settled and get connected. With more than 100 clubs and affiliates around the world, there's a Spartan in just about every city. And as an MSU Alumni Association member, you'll quickly feel right at home. Wherever you go, community, connections, careers, and class. Four great reasons to visit alumni.msu.edu today to activate your membership in the largest Spartan organization in the world. That's alumni.msu.edu, the Michigan State University Alumni Association, your personal network for life.
This is Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's your host, Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, it's a pleasure to welcome to the program Dave Armstrong. Dave is the President and Chief Executive Officer of Greenstone Farm Credit Services. Dave, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Kirk.
For our listeners who may not be familiar with Greenstone Farm Credit Services, can you give us a snapshot?
Well, Kurt, we're the dominant provider of credit and other financial services to Michigan agriculture. We are organized as a cooperative, and we're here to provide a dependable, competitive, and responsible source of credit to predominantly production agriculture as well as some other eligible agribusinesses, and actually people who just want to build a home and live in the country.
So essentially, you're a bank for agricultural producers and processors and other folks who may live in the countryside.
Yes, we are, without checking in deposits.
Dave, agriculture, we like to say on this program, the original green industry. You know agriculture very well. You're working with folks in agriculture all the time. How important is agriculture to Michigan's economy? I understand there was a recent study that just underscored the importance of agriculture.
Well, right. The first study that was done showed that production agriculture and the broader industry that would include, you know, both direct and indirect jobs was over $70 billion, I think, as little as under 5 years ago. And in that short period of time, a new study was done and showed that we're probably greater than just over $90 billion today. So it's a very significant contributor and helps really diversify our manufacturing economy for the future.
Yeah, and from that $70 billion to the $90 billion, I mean, it's no secret, although there have been some challenges, but agriculture has been a very good story, especially in the last 5 to 10 years.
Yes, it certainly has. And just to underscore that, being the dominant lender to the industry, we've grown on probably the last 10-year average at over 10% on a compounded average annual basis. So our growth reflects certainly what's going on in the industry.
So when good things happen in the industry, good things happen at Greenstone.
Exactly.
Dave, you're hiring a lot of people. I mean, you're growing at 10% per year. You're all over the state of Michigan. The farm credit system is essentially a national system.
Correct.
As well. So across the system, you're always looking for talented young people.
Yes, we are. And we're not only looking for those kids that come from a farm background, but also kids who have the drive and desire to maybe want to explore different kinds of curriculum in college, who are looking for jobs maybe outside where they originally thought they were going to go when they came into college. Kids that maybe are into computer science, kids that are thinking about communications. We have positions for all of those because they're not all just jobs down on the farm anymore. The industry really is, the jobs are in those industries that support farm production.
Well, before we started this interview, you were telling me you have some pretty remarkable statistics about projected demand in agriculture and supply of young people coming out of the system, which is pretty compelling, really.
Yeah, the study indicated that between 2010 and 2015, Industry experts projected there would be a need of 54,400 jobs nationally to be filled in the agricultural, food, and renewable resources industry. About 29,300 of those degrees would be coming from traditional ag sources, but yet 24,200 would be coming from related disciplines like biology and so forth. Now, if you did the math on that, it comes out to only 53,500. So we're still short of that 54,400 that industry experts believe that we're going to need during that time frame. And I think that just tells or underscores the need and the growth of the industry compared to many other industries in our economy today.
And when we look at agricultural workforce development, of course, there are needs for college graduates, advanced degrees, but also ag tech programs, also high school graduates who are looking for careers. It's not one size fits all, right?
Correct. There are many jobs that require just some kind of technical training. An example that I can give is running very high-tech spray application vehicles. Where they are run by computer, they have GPS, they have to be able to calculate spray rates correctly as they go over the fields to apply product. And those jobs with some technical training will pay up to $50,000 a year without a four-year degree. And there's a number of those kinds of careers available in our industry that people just aren't aware of.
My guest is Dave Armstrong, who is the President and Chief Executive Officer of Greenstone Farm Credit Services. As I think about it, Dave, agriculture may be no different than a lot of other industries. I mean, there are some employers out there that are just looking for problem-solving skills, a good work ethic. They can be trained in the subject matter of a particular industry. Is that also true at Greenstone?
That's also true. Now, we have new hires that come to us who don't have a degree in agriculture, but maybe they grew up on a farm. They have all those characteristics, whether they grew up on the farm or maybe they didn't. And we're employing, again, kids with computer science degrees, communication degrees that have that drive, have that discipline, and see agriculture as a career that they want to pursue. Those are the kinds of folks we're looking for.
And because they have those skills, the creativity, the energy, and what have you, they also have a passion for learning. And why not learn about agriculture?
That's right.
Dave, what are some of the challenges? I mean, we've been talking about a lot of good news about agriculture. As you look, there are some other matters. I know the Ag Leaders of Michigan are looking at infrastructure, for example, mm-hmm. water quality, in addition mm-hmm. to workforce development. But what do you see as some of the major challenges that in the next maybe 4 to 5 years?
Well, I think it's going to be a challenge for the industry to tell its story, Kirk. People, I think, in this country, and rightly so, have been able to take their source of food for granted. We have one of the most affordable, healthy supplies of food the world has ever known, and at a very reasonable price. And today, you know, the industry is being attacked from all sides for a number of different reasons. But I think people have to be engaged and become more informed that food doesn't really just grow in the grocery store. And they have to understand that the producers who produce that food, they live on the farms where that food is produced. They have grown their families. There are some for well over 100 years. They don't want to pollute the environment. They have a tremendous amount of investment in land and machinery and equipment, and their reputation's at stake. And they want to produce a very sustainable product for their families as well as future generations. And so I think to get the word out about the importance this industry is not only to our country, but to feed the world, because we're looking at a population of 9 billion by 2050. We're going to have to do it in a way with probably fewer acres, less chemical use, in a way that's very sustainable. And it's going to take a lot of financial support. It's going to take a lot of great minds working together to make sure that happens. And so I think that will be the biggest challenge over the next horizon.
Well, I don't need to tell you, but over the last many years, I mean, things like fertilizers, herbicides, pesticides, those have those applications have been reduced significantly as research goes on. Water quality, water use has improved not only by the producers, but in the processing end of it as well. I mean, agriculture has made some great strides in terms of sustainability.
It really has. And again, it's getting that story out because those who have an agenda to profit, I think, from a different story would lead you to believe that some of those usages are getting worse. They want to magnify sometimes food contamination issues that maybe are not as severe as the media would like to portray. But we need to get the good story out because there's a lot more good things to tell than negative.
You know, historically, and you know this, American public has had a pretty positive perception of family farm. Sometimes they may question certain production practices, but in general, the family farm is sort of an icon of American history. Mm-hmm. And I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but when people go to the grocery store, most of them, when they're shopping and buying things, I mean, they're not really thinking negative thoughts. They're looking for the best deal. But they feel pretty confident that the food is safe and it's fresh and it's nutritious.
Well, they really do, and they should, mm-hmm. because as I said earlier, the performance speaks for itself. When you look really at the safety and the few number of incidents that we have in the millions of people our industry feeds each day, it's pretty remarkable track record.
Well, a lot of the folks, most of the folks listening to this interview are not going to have a strong farm background and may be folks that know very little about agriculture. From your perspective as a person in the industry, what can an average homeowner or a shopper or someone who's listening to this show do to learn more about agriculture? What are the first one or two steps they might take?
Well, I think, don't believe the first media report you read when it comes to some kind of a negative report. I think, do a little bit more research, dig into it a little bit. We have lots of information at our fingertips today through technology to get different viewpoints. I think also, take an opportunity to take advantage of Breakfast on the Farm events or similar kinds of events that are in many different areas where it's not that far of a drive from an urban area to get out to spend a morning and have breakfast on a farm and actually meet the farmer and his family and look at the production techniques and listen to why they're doing what they're doing. I think it will provide, again, a different side and instill and make that confidence in the food supply system even greater.
And a lot of folks now, there's a growth in farmers markets in a lot of communities. There's a lot of agricultural tourism, orchards that folks go to. I mean, a lot of opportunities. And a lot of folks are doing that already. Sometimes they don't equate the local orchard, though, with the big picture agriculture.
Right, and that's certainly a growing part of our food system is buy local. And that's a great way to get to know the source of where your food is coming from, the practices that produces. Employing some of his challenges and getting to know as a neighbor and another human being because they're just like you and I. They're there to serve their markets and raise a family and do what they love to do.
Yeah, and even though we're on radio and sometimes we talk about media, et cetera, there's nothing like that interpersonal communication, is there, Dave?
Exactly.
I mean,
it's all about
relationships.
That's
what your business is founded upon.
You bet.
A good deal. I've been talking with Dave Armstrong, who is the president and chief executive officer of Greenstone Farm Credit Services. Dave, thanks for spending time with us on Greening of the Great Lakes.
Great, I enjoyed it. Thanks, Kirk.
That was Greening of the Great Lakes with Dr. Kirk Heinze on MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Find more online at greeningofthegreatlakes.com.
Hi, it's Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association. We've all heard the expression, it's all about who you know. And wherever you are on your career ladder, having a friend on the inside can make all the difference. When you join the MSU Alumni Association family, you're instantly connected to 500,000 Spartans around the world, many of whom are key decision makers in just about every major enterprise. Whether you're looking for a way in or a way up, your MSU Alumni Association affiliation can help you link up with that MSU alum who'll always take your call just because you're a Spartan. Building your network right now before you need it is the best possible career insurance, and joining the MSU Alumni Association is the best possible way to get the most out of your Spartan life. Learn more online at alumni.msu.edu. That's alumni.msu.edu. The MSU Alumni Association, your personal network for life.
This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's more with Russ White.
Thank you, Shannon. Here's Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis with Detroit Public Television President and CEO Rich Homburg.
Well, joining us today, a gentleman I've known for a long, long time. I consider him a friend and someone I have great respect for, Rich Homburg, with Detroit Public Television. You worked in the field of radio. You've kind of seen it all, and it's great to have you join us
today. It's great to see you, Mark. It's great to be here. I'm a fan of the show. I called Russ recently about a show I heard the two of you do. It was sit in your car and listen to radio as you were telling the story about a tailgate story. Wonderful.
In addition to delivering your son to Michigan State as a incoming sophomore this year, you've done so many wonderful things for Michigan State. But I'd like to open up talking a little bit about your perspective on media. We're sitting here in the Communication Arts Building, which I am a graduate of, and the world is ever-changing. In fact, every day I come into the office, I expect to see some new platform that is going to allow for the distribution of different forms of communication, and you've been able to kind of see a lot. And I know it's a very general term, but just kind of some of your perspectives on the change in the world.
Well, you know, things are changing dramatically. I was in Minneapolis last week and saw a presentation by the Magid organization, famous media researchers, and now 40% of all households have another way to watch TV. Let's say they're a Comcast subscriber. They also might have Amazon, or they might have a Roku box. So there's lots and lots of ways. If you talk to folks, almost everybody has somewhat of a different way of watching TV, whereas when we all grew up, it was only you turned the television on, right? You grabbed the clicker and
watch what they delivered to you.
Yeah. That was, And so there's time shifting. There's binge watching. There's a million ways to watch TV, do TV. And at the same time, core stations, the trust and loyalty of a public television station is very important, and we never want to diminish that. So we live in a world where 1.5 million people a week come to Detroit Public Television in Southeast Michigan, and that number is pretty stable. And at the same time, they have lots and lots of options. And so if you work in public television, about once every 20 minutes, somebody comes up and says, here's the new thing that's going to kill you. It's going to be the History Channel or Discovery or A&E or Amazon. And I think if we really, just much like a university, if we really dig into what our mission is, we shouldn't worry. We should be confident. There's a great role for us. But there's also, and I think you see it here at the university, there's a great opportunity for organizations that want to have a voice and a conversation. And if you look at what Scott Westerman's doing here, or if you look at what Russ is doing here, Russ White, the university has an opportunity to have a conversation with the community that's barrier spanning. And so if you look, you know, like I read Scott's stuff every week. That's a really unique voice for a university. Mm-hmm. So there are lots of opportunities and lots of ways to mess up what you have, but also a changing world, so you have to adapt to it.
We have on our campus a media sandbox, which gives an opportunity for students to engage. As you're out in the real world, what's some advice you would give to our faculty, to our dean, but maybe more importantly to the parent or child who's thinking about getting into this business of where their mind should be going as far as the future of television broadcast?
Sure. Well, some things really change, but some things never change. Be a great writer. Learn how to write. Learn how to communicate. Learn how to take an idea and shape it. That never, ever, ever changes. If you're a great writer, you can be a great filmmaker. You can be a great television anchor. You can be great on the radio. But you know, what do they say? If you can write, you can think, right? And so, and get grounded and get connected to content and really understand it. And then get multi-platform and understand. You know, Twitter's different from Facebook, and Facebook's different from LinkedIn, and television's different from radio. Understand the platforms. And so, everything's changed, and at the same thing, nothing's changed. In the end, you want to say, hey, Mark, I've got an idea for you, whether it's that in the newspaper or in the television. So, again, all changed and all not the change. But get great basics and then sort of installing them everywhere.
So let me sort of you're the head of the Detroit Public TV. Mm-hmm. So as you were thinking about this role, you were very actively engaged in radio in Detroit, did a great job. So what dialogues do you want to sponsor about the community, about the region that are relevant, you think, to your role as Detroit Public Television?
Well, we're about 5 years. I was there about a year, and we went to the board and we said, we're not going to do a strategic plan immediately, but here's some things we think about. One, there are about five issues we're worried about: children, our role in education, culture, at all levels, public affairs, the environment, and health. And so we want to understand them and greatly understand their importance and then really dig into where should we be. It turns out that Dancing with the Stars is a very popular program. So since we're a nonprofit, we don't need to do that, right? The Voice is a popular program. Reality TV is really popular these days. All pretty well covered by the commercial folks. What's missing, we think, in the world is how do you connect important ideas at every level? How do you communicate them and understand them? And so our goal is to be able to walk in. If we walk into Michigan State, we'd like to be able to say, we're not educators, and that's not our role, but we think we understand how media can help or play a role at Michigan State, like as well as any media outlet in the state. And that's what we should do, right? We're nonprofit public television. We're supposed to do the things that aren't being done. And so in order to do that, you got to understand the issues and then what makes you unique. I always tell the staff, for a long time, I think public television has always said, what we do is important and it's hard. Where I want to get to is, what we do is important and it's hard and we make it easy. And I think if you look at where Michigan State is, really well-run universities, what you do is important and it's very hard, but you make it easy. And I think we have a much smaller scale than a great land grant university, but I think it's the same thing, to dig into what you really should be. And
I think that the issues in the metro area mm-hmm. are both complex, mm-hmm. and because they are just hard issues. Mm-hmm. And they're complex because there are so many points of view depending on where you sit mm-hmm. geographically, ethnically, socioeconomically. How do you think about reconciling those in a way that tells a story that's fulsome and mm-hmm. and multifaceted?
Well, Detroit is it's a really interesting town to work in. And there are a couple of things I think that have changed. I think we're headed in a very good direction, Detroit and statewide. And I think they're good people at the table. But if you want to work and you want to serve Detroit, I think the first thing you have to understand is a little bit of the history and respect for that history and an appreciation for it. And public television arriving like a hero to say, we're here to save the day, that doesn't work in Detroit. It doesn't work in most places, but it really doesn't work in Detroit. So go in with respect, understanding, and stay involved in the town, and then find a way to serve. And I found if you start that way in Detroit, there are great opportunities. And the other thing, one trend I see in our state and our city that I think is very powerful is that the conversation isn't just about the Detroit problem anymore. It's about the future of all of our cities. It's a more, if you're going to attack, let's say, issues of race, if it's always one African-American folks and white folks at each other, that's a pretty tough battle. Well, today you have an emerging Hispanic population. You have an emerging Arab population. If you start to diversify the conversation, it lowers the temperature. You find a little more understanding. And again, you have to stay in the game at public television. Understand the issues. But I like the idea that Detroit isn't just challenged. Inkster's challenged, so is Redford, so is Saginaw, so is Flint, so is the areas of Grand Rapids. Right. Lansing has its challenges. Well, I don't know, you're probably familiar with Bruce Katz.
Yeah.
Bruce Katz is sort of one of the big drivers of dialogue around cities in our country. And he says, our futures are cities. They have big challenges, but they're solvable, and they have huge opportunities. Let's act on them. And that's a more, I think, upbeat, optimistic right. approach as opposed to, those stories of what are we going to do with Detroit? That script just drives me crazy. What can we do together today for Detroit? Just a couple of clicks different.
I know Bruce from from doing some work at Brookings, mm-hmm. But also from his work in the state, mm-hmm. Primarily sponsored through business leaders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because they've been trying to capitalize. Yeah. The studies that Bruce has done to try to bring greater understanding to the challenges of the state, mm-hmm. not simply the challenges that are every day in the newspaper around the finances mm-hmm. of Detroit. And it is a very difficult set of issues. If you talk to our students, your son, mm-hmm. Part of the attraction of going somewhere else is not only that there's a job there, mm-hmm. But now there are plenty of jobs mm-hmm. open in Michigan
right.
for talented young people. It is the excitement of the city.
Right. Absolutely.
And they are prepared and have been prepared, if I, again, look at the experiences of our students mm-hmm. in other places, to be a pioneer in a relatively underdeveloped area. It has assets. It may only have one or two restaurants, not a whole street
sure.
of them, or they may have to go away for dry cleaning when they can, and the convenience store is the only grocery store, mm-hmm. so they've got to use public transportation to go find fruits and vegetables and other things they want to buy. But they're prepared to be a pioneer in an emerging neighborhood. And I think that's an energy that we've yet to tap
right.
In Michigan. And I think Dan Gilbert mm-hmm. is trying to do that right now in Detroit in that spirit. But it's not something that's ubiquitous across right. our cities. Grand Rapids, I think, is working hard to do that
yeah.
as
Grand
well.
Grand Rapids seems to be making tremendous progress.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
And you're in the middle of a conversation between Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon, Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis, and Detroit Public Television leader Rich Homburg.
You know, I think for a long time, and I've been in meetings, this is like 10 years ago, for a long time there was the why can't we get those kids to stay and not go to Chicago, let's say. To me...
You're ready for that in 2 years.
Yeah, but you know what? Let's just say, let's be generous and say 9 out of 10 kids would rather be in Chicago than Detroit. Okay. The issue isn't, I don't know what to do with those 9. I want to find more of the ones. And Detroit is a place, if you want to go to Chicago and get a good job with a nice consulting firm, have a good, you know, kind of straight up experience, cool. There's always the one or two that say, I don't want to do that. I want to go to a place that has two restaurants because I want to open a third. Detroit's a town for folks who are, the word pioneers is perfect, who say, you know what, everybody goes to Chicago, not me. I don't know about you, but I don't wish I was at the Chicago television station. I don't aspire to be at the New York station. I like being here. You know why? You get a lot of at-bats. You know, you get a lot of tries. You know, I'm sure Mark, there's lots of colleges probably interested in Mark Hollis's services, but I think he's making such a mark here. And same thing with you. I remember you coming to WWJ and talking for an hour. Joe Donovan kept wanting to talk about the football team. I'm like, Joe, can we talk about the academics? But there was a complete sense of you were in the place, exactly the place you wanted to be, and you're going to drive. I don't know what to do with people who wish they were someplace else. They should go. But what I want to find is thousands and thousands of folks who want to be in Detroit because, man, that's a great opportunity. I think that's what Dan Gilbert sees.
And I think we're taking, actually, through the College of Communication Arts and Sciences, through a number of programs that we're doing and have been doing for a long time in mm-hmm. Detroit, lots of young people down there.
Right.
And I think what Dan has done is provide optimism and hope, mm-hmm. Even though it may be small geographically. Mm-hmm. But provide optimism and hope. I think, you know, we've done that in other neighborhoods in smaller ways through the programs that we're doing around food or
sure.
around community development. Lots of things that we've just done in the mm-hmm. neighborhoods for a very long period of time. They're a point of optimism and hope.
Right.
And that's why you see certain neighborhoods in Detroit, you know, rallying around
sure.
Trying to take matters into their own hands and find positive ways mm-hmm. to do things. And I think that sense of optimism and hope is something we have to continue to try to find a way to promote.
I don't want the time to slip by without telling one quick story about President Simon, and I think it's very emblematic of the university. I think there's an openness and an engagement that you see here. When I call Michigan State and I have a question, how do I get to this person? I say, well, I don't know the person, but I'll help you get there. And there's just sort of, it's an easy place. It's a very approachable place for being one of the largest universities in the world. So we came up for the big parent, do you want to go to our college meeting?
Right.
So we're sitting
green
in the hall.
Green carpet days.
Right. And we're sitting in the hall, and a bunch of staffers are talking about the school, and who walks in but the president of the university. And I said to my wife, I bet she doesn't do this every day, but I bet she does it a lot of days. And so you spent about 20 minutes answering questions. We did the tour, and we learned about Go Green, Go White, and Nick's having fun. He wanted to be a Spartan. We're leaving campus, and out of the darkness, we hear this voice say, did you have a good time? Look around. Who but the president of the university has the presence of mind to say, I saw those people earlier. They're up here for a tour. And that, to me, says everything about you're the president of one of the largest universities in the world. And at the same time, I drive up here today, and you're having coffee with a group of folks in a book in a reading group at the Traverse Pie Company. To me, that's
owned by an MSU person.
Is that right? Yeah. But if you look at where's media going, where's university yeah. going, where's Detroit going, do big important things, make them accessible, make them easy, make them inviting. And I think that you see that a lot here.
I've seen her help people move in.
Right.
In the fall.
Right.
Pushing the green cart.
Move pylons, right? Yeah.
You know, I think going back to the choices that our young people are making, I have a son who's going to be our junior at Michigan State. And just this weekend, he said, Dad, when I graduate, I'm going to go to the coast, east or west. And I said, that's great, Muskegon or Detroit. There is a mentality right now, and we went through a process of talking about why and then the value that he can deliver to the state of Michigan. And when Nancy and I made a gift to the university, part of that was embodied in that mindset of let's do what we can to chip away here. Recently, I took some of our coaches down, all of our head coaches down to Detroit to walk the streets and see what's happening down there, because it is right. It's what are we going to do about Detroit has to go away, because something is happening to Detroit, and it's how can we spark that next connection that's going to make it a little bit better. And that's going to be a visit I'm going to make with my son. It's going to be a one-on-one of, here are some exciting things that are happening. You don't necessarily have to block the state of Michigan out of your mind as one of the options for where your career path or where your impact can occur upon graduation.
And some will go and come back, and that happens a lot. Mm-hmm. But the point is you want to be available. I tell our staff three C's: confidence, competence, and celebration. You got to be confident of who you are. You can't wish you were something else. I didn't play on your football team. I'm not built that way. I don't wish. I can't worry about that, right? I got to be who I am, and I got to be proud of who I am. Sometimes in public television, we can get a little defensive. Mm-hmm. We're not a commercial television station. I'm really good with that. You got a great athletic department. Not all your teams win every game, but you're a pretty confident guy, right? Mm-hmm. You got to be confident. You got to be competent. You got to be good at what you do and do it. And if you look at Dan Gilbert, right? If you read his Isms book, he wants to be really world class at what he does. You got to be very confident, competent, and then you got to celebrate and have some fun. And say, and whether it's walking up to somebody in New Orleans or Chicago and saying "Go Green, Go White," a little celebration there, right? Mm-hmm. And just you got to celebrate and appreciate the sense of your success, right? And I think Detroit, to me, we should be really confident. They tried to build cars other places in the world. There is no second place in how to design and manufacture logistics, safety systems, energy, powertrain. There's no second place in the world in how to design cars. Mm-hmm. We should be very confident about that. We have three level one research universities, and they work pretty well together. We should be very confident about that. You have one of the great communication schools. You should be very confident. So, and then celebrate occasionally. Sometimes we forget that. But I think that's where I see Detroit is. I got that whole, let me explain Detroit or apologize. I'll die all day explain Detroit to you, but I'm not going to apologize for it. I love Detroit. It's a fun place to be.
Right.
One of the reasons that we, I still get the question about opening the Detroit office. Mm-hmm. And now other universities are interested in finding space, particularly in what I would call the developed area right now in Midtown, downtown. And I said, we were in Detroit all along. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were in the building with the county. We mm-hmm. were in Youthville. We still are in Youthville. We have another space that we have in some of the outer areas of Detroit, but I wanted to make a statement with the Detroit Center that we were in Detroit at its worst time. And the way to do that is do something visible. It's not that you, because people can't see all the work that happens around food and urban gardens or kids or everything else that we're doing. So it was a symbol that we were going to be a part of the Renaissance of Detroit.
I do have to tell you one thing about Mark.
For the
JR story, it was hilarious. There are two big stations and AM stations in Detroit, and there are two smaller ones. I ran one of the smaller ones and one of the bigger ones. So for years, Michigan State Athletics bounced between WXYT and WDFN, and WXYT and DFN. So eventually, when I got here, your sports were on WXYT, a fine station, but it was a smaller station, and it wasn't one of the big ones. So we were working away at it, and he and I had a good relationship. So my phone rings one day, and he says, Rich, I got to tell you something. And I said, Mark, stop. I said, if you're telling me you're going back to DFN, and you're going to bounce over there again, you're trying to get something started. He said, Rich, we're not going to DFN. We're going to JR. My competitor, drop-dead competitor. And I said, oh, my God. I said, congratulations. Dad, I don't know what the deal is. I don't know how you made that happen. But that is a big accomplishment, and that's as big as the aircraft carrier to me. I mean, that what you've done there, and how you brought in JR. I know Russ is knows the station. Tom O'Brien, the first year who now runs JR, he says to me, "You were really early in the deal," and he says, "You know what the difference is in partnership?" He says, "The phone rings." And Mark says, "It's early in the basketball season. Why don't you bring up a whole group of people? And then we'll go and we'll meet and we'll go spend some time with Coach Izzo." Yeah. And that's Mark Hollis, man. That's just
that's true.
But I was I was sitting there and I thought, I just lost the deal and I'm congratulating the guy. It was a really solid effort.
Well, we had some great years together, and you always have my respect. And,
same here.
It's good to know you have a son up here.
And also enormous opportunities to partner in your new role and make sure that we're joining our voices for the betterment of the state.
Absolutely.
Appreciate your leadership.
Thanks, Rich.
Great to see you. Thanks, guys.
This is MSU Today with Russ White on AM 870 WKAR.
That was Detroit Public Television President and CEO Rich Homburg talking with Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis and Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon. To hear their conversation again, please visit SpartanPodcast.com. I'm Russ White for MSU Today, and it's a pleasure to welcome Kirk Cousins, record-setting Michigan State University quarterback, of course, to the program, and current Washington Redskins quarterback in the NFL today. Kirk is out with his debut book called Game Changer. Inside, he gives readers an inside look at his life as experienced under the bright lights of college and professional football, and how he puts his faith and values into action both on and off the field. Kirk, great to have you back on the show.
Thanks for having me on, Russ. Appreciate it.
And Kirk, it's called Game Changer. Again, tell us what sort of motivated you to write the book and who's it for?
The book is really intentional towards young people, whether that's middle school, high school, college-age kids, trying to really have an impact on them as they try to find their way in life. But I wrote it in a way where it really can be read by people even younger than middle schoolers, and really it can also be read by adults. So I didn't want to hone in on any particular group too much, but I certainly had young people in mind when I wrote the book.
And Kirk, why do you think it's important for young people to have positive role models, and who were some of yours or continue to be?
Well, I think back to my years in middle school and high school, and I see how, as much as I may have thought I had it all figured out, I didn't. And I still had a lot to learn, and I had a long ways to go. And the fact that I was able to make any good decisions was based on the fact that I had people around me who were positive role models, who showed me an example of the way I needed to behave and gave me a great picture of what I wanted to become. So I think that this book can be that same kind of a resource to anybody out there who's willing to read it. They can see a picture of where they want to go and get a vision for what their life can become if they choose to follow the principles in this book.
Kirk Cousins, the full title of your book, Game Changer, is also Faith, Football, and Finding Your Way. Talk about how you merge your faith with football and how it's helped you make good decisions on and off the field.
Football is what I do. I'm an NFL quarterback, but being a Christian and operating with a faith in God is who I am. And so whatever I do, being a Christian is going to be a part of it. It's going to be the foundational part of it. So it's impossible for me to write a book. It's impossible for me to play quarterback in the NFL without my faith coming through what I do. So that is a foundational principle in the whole book, is my faith, and the Bible and the truths of the Bible are throughout the book. But I believe that the principles in the book, whether it's the importance of finding a role model, the importance of having the right friends, or privilege and responsibility, all those themes, I think, are timeless truths that, regardless of the faith you hold, they're pretty much indisputable that those are proper principles to build your life upon.
Kirk Cousins is my guest on MSU Today, and you do offer a lot of advice about faith, football, and life in general. What would you say is maybe the most important piece of advice you like to give?
Well, I think, you know, the underlying theme of the book is the two verses in the Bible that I built my life upon, which are Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, and it says to trust in the Lord with all your heart, not lean on your own understanding and all your ways, to acknowledge Him, and He will direct your steps. And I believe that what that message is that I want to give to young people is that you're going to face ups and downs in life. You're going to have challenges, and understand that in those challenges, there is a point and there is a purpose to them. You are going to learn things that are going to benefit you down the road, and you need to just trust and hold on and keep fighting and understand that there are good things coming as long as you stay obedient to God and to His Word and to His principles.
And you're living your dream, Kirk, pursuing the NFL. What's your advice for, you know, your closing advice for people sort of chasing their own dreams?
As much as we may have dreams for ourselves, I think God has a plan and a dream for all of us too, and He wants to see those dreams accomplished, and I think that they will be accomplished as long as we stay connected to Him and surrendered to Him. And so I think that it's hard for God to steer a parked car. You know, we have to be moving, we have to be working, we have to be developing ourselves, but as long as we're putting the work in and putting the time in, I think God opens doors and closes other doors to lead us to where He wants us.
And is there a final message or two you hope people take away, Kirk, when they read Game Changer?
Well, I want people, especially young people, to walk away being motivated to live a life and to start a habit of decision-making that not only blesses them, but blesses those around them. And to walk away from having read that book saying, I am now going to start making decisions and building my life upon things that aren't going to fade and that are going to hold on and provide for me in the good times and the bad. And I think it's important that people build their lives around the same truths that I built my life upon. And if they can learn anything from my story, I hope that that book can be a major tool for them to do that.
Kirk Cousins, thank you so much for joining us. A best of luck with Game Changer, Faith, Football, and Finding Your Way. The easiest place, I think, for people to find it, simply go to kirkcousins.org, and all the appropriate links will be there. And Kirk, thanks again for joining us, and best of luck with the Redskins this year.
Okay, thank you, Russ.
Kirk Cousins, our guest on MSU Today. Thank you for listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. And join us every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock for MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.